Welcome to Beyond Treatment, Conversations for Cancer Survivors. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson-Bleski, Director of the Cancer Center of Western Wisconsin, and I'm glad you're here. Before we get started, I want to share why this topic matters to me. Survivorship is close to my heart, not only professionally, but personally. I'm also the proud daughter of a cancer survivor. And when we use the word survivor in this podcast, we are using it in the most inclusive way. Survivorship does not begin after treatment ends. It begins at diagnosis. Survivorship includes people living with cancer, going through treatment, and navigating life long after treatment is complete. This podcast was created to support people at every point in that journey through thoughtful, practical conversations with members of the cancer care team about the physical, emotional, and lifestyle changes that often come with a cancer diagnosis. Today, I'm joined by Stephanie Crone, an oncology advanced practice clinician who works closely with people from the time of diagnosis, throughout treatment, and well into long-term survivorship. Stephanie brings a lot of experience helping patients understand follow-up care, manage ongoing concerns, and navigate what survivorship really looks like in day-to-day life. Stephanie, thank you so much for being here. I'm really glad we're having this conversation.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm so glad to be here too, and I'm excited.
Today's episode is called Survivorship Care. Who is a survivor? What happens after diagnosis and treatment? And why it matters? Follow-up care for people affected by cancer is unique and often looks very different from primary care or other specialties. Survivorship care is about more than routine appointments or surveillance testing. It addresses the physical side effects that can happen during or long after treatment, the emotional impact of fear and uncertainty, and the ongoing questions many people carry with them as they continue living with cancer. It also helps people understand what symptoms matter, when to speak up, and how to stay connected to their care team over time. Today we're talking about what survivorship care really looks like in practice, why it's so important, and how it supports people across every phase of their cancer journey. We have a few questions for you today, Stephanie. The first one, who is a survivor and what is survivorship care?
Thank you, Lisa. I think this is a fabulous question, so I appreciate you asking. There are several medical societies that have developed a definition of survivor and survivorship. And us in the oncology world, we tend to use that as our guidelines as who's a survivor. Basically, these institutions define a survivor as an individual who has been given a cancer diagnosis, and they are surviving from the time of that diagnosis throughout the remainder of their life. And it includes those who are living with cancer, as well as those who are free of cancer after their treatments. Additionally, family members, friends, and caregivers are also impacted by the diagnosis and the treatments, and so therefore they are included in the definition of survivors and survivorship care.
That's really interesting. I didn't realize that last piece there.
I think a lot of people don't realize that until they are in a situation where they have a family member or a friend who's been diagnosed with cancer. I don't think people truly understand how much cancer impacts everyone in the family and friendship unit when it comes to a diagnosis of cancer. Additionally, I wanted to discuss a couple of really important points about what survivorship care is and what's included in survivorship care. As you had mentioned earlier, Lisa, survivorship focuses on the health and well-being of a person with cancer from the time of their diagnosis and throughout the remainder of their life. We specifically focus on physical, mental, emotional, social, and even financial effects of cancer, the diagnosis, and the treatments. It includes follow-up care with us in the oncology world, so we can manage late effects of treatment, look for cancer recurrence or secondary cancers, focus on your quality of life, but it also includes the involvement of your primary care physician so they can help manage some of your other long-term medical problems that will help with your overall quality of life. Per the Institute of Medicine and the National Research Committee, survivorship care is defined in a way that has four distinct components. These components include the prevention and detection of new cancers and recurrent cancer, the surveillance for cancer spread, recurrence, or secondary cancers, intervention for consequences of cancer and its treatment, as well as the coordination between specialists and primary care providers to ensure all of your health needs are met.
Thank you so much for going over that, what survivorship care is for the listeners and myself. Now, why is it so important?
Lisa, that's a great question. Quality of life is our biggest goal, along with treating your cancer, when it comes to getting you back up to functioning and living the way you were prior to treatment, or as close to that as we can. Quality of life issues often overlap with or are even due to long-term side effects of the treatments we give you. Some of these issues could include physical effects, such as therapy-related changes, physical changes to your body after treatments, and then other health issues or secondary cancers. We can also see things like cognitive effects or memory issues that occur from our treatments. There can be long-term emotional effects such as depression and anxiety, even PTSD. There's a lot of psychosocial effects, and these can affect your relationship with your family and friends, your relationship with work and your colleagues, trying to figure out who you are after your diagnosis and your treatments, and what's, quote, normal now. Finally, there's things such as financial effects that the cost of cancer care can cause long-term, such as your inability to return to work, unpaid bills, the transportation costs to and from treatments. We can see it affect people's spiritual health. They may question their relationship with their faith or even their meaning of life. We can see a lot of fertility issues and sexual health issues that can occur long-term in our patients. And then there's even the end-of-life care that can affect patients themselves as well as their entire family unit and caregiving unit. Another reason why survivorship care is so important is that the National Cancer Institute is projecting that by 2040, so just a few years from now, there will be over 26 million people living with a cancer diagnosis.
Wow, that is a really high number. It also makes me think that's a good thing because they're living with cancer, so they are surviving.
Right. Our treatments have gotten much better over the years with new scientific discoveries, and people are surviving a lot longer after their diagnosis and treatment.
That's great to hear. Now, tell me about the difference between survivorship visits from treatment visits.
That's a really good question as well. So follow-up care depends on where a patient is at during their cancer journey. A lot of these visits often overlap. For instance, if a patient is in the middle of a treatment, their follow-up visit may not only include symptoms that are related to their active treatment and addressing that, but we also may be addressing some symptoms that could potentially occur long-term as well and starting to manage that. When patients are months to years out from their treatments, follow-up care may focus more on monitoring those late effects, screening for symptoms that could indicate recurrent cancer or developments of secondary cancer. So in short, they can often overlap.
Okay, that's good to know. And you're talking about from months to years. So how long does survivorship care typically last?
The entire lifespan of that patient who has been diagnosed with cancer. As we said early on when we talked about the definition of who's a survivor is someone who has a cancer diagnosis, and it's from the time of their diagnosis all the way through the remainder of their life. So again, that could be months, but it also could be many, many years. In addition, I mentioned before too that family and loved ones, as well as friends, are also included in this. So we need to be able to support them during all of this time, but especially after a patient is no longer with us. This type of survivorship care can also be done by your primary care provider. It doesn't necessarily have to be done just by your oncology team.
That's really helpful to know. What fears or concerns show up most often for cancer survivors?
Lisa, the fear I hear most often from my patients is the fear of recurrence. They're very concerned about their cancer coming back. and what will happen next if that does occur. This is a very common, very real, and frankly, very understandable concern for our patients. Additionally, another concern is the concern of a second cancer diagnosis or a new diagnosis. And then finally, a lot of the other concerns or fears I hear are about long-term side effects and will they actually go away?
That's helpful. And that comes up for so many people. That leads me to my next question. When should survivors call between visits?
Anytime. Anytime. I can't stress that enough. I always tell my patients when I see them, you are never a bother. If you have something going on and you're not sure what it is, if it's something to be concerned about, I want you to call, and all your providers should want you to call. Our care teams are experienced and can help you determine whether or not this is an issue that needs to be addressed by us in the cancer center, or should it go to your primary team. We also can figure out if you need further evaluation. You're never a problem. You're never a bother. If you're worried, call.
So if I have a cough that's going on for 6 weeks, I shouldn't hesitate to call?
Nope. And we may refer you to your primary to start there. If you had, say, a diagnosis of lung cancer, we might take that on primarily and then get the imaging ourselves. If you had a diagnosis of, say, breast cancer and have been off of treatment for a year, we might refer you to your primary. But it's not a problem to call and ask. We would rather you ask and get checked out and make sure we don't miss something than have you sit on a problem that turns out to be a bigger problem than what we thought.
I think that is so important to know that I or anyone who calls wouldn't be a bother, because we always think, oh, you know, have this going on, it might be nothing, should I call, shouldn't I call? So you're saying just call.
Yes. And in fact, from the get-go when I meet my patients, I always tell them that exact same thing. You are not a bother, please call us. Half the time, or more than half the time, we can address the problems very quickly, and we can often even keep people out of the hospital or out of our emergency departments if we know what's going on.
It's really helpful.
Thank you.
How can survivors prepare to get the most out of visits?
Oh my gosh, I think this might be my most favorite question that you've asked so far. I think the most important way patients and their families can get the biggest bang for their buck is to come prepared. And what I mean by that is make a list. Write down symptoms you may be having. Write down questions or concerns that you or your loved ones have. This helps us as providers make sure we're focusing on the right things that you want to know about and that we don't overlook anything that you had questions about. Finally, I would say if we are talking about something and you don't understand or don't feel like we've answered your question, say so. We're not going to get offended. And if we do, you probably shouldn't be seeing that provider in the first place. I also want to point out something here that I think is really hard for a lot of patients and their family members. There's some topics that are really uncomfortable to discuss, but they're so important to discuss. The two that come to mind particularly are sexual health problems after cancer treatments and mental health problems. As I mentioned before, our treatments, whether it's surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, we can cause a lot of problems. And if we don't know that these things are happening, we can't address it and help you try to fix it. Not every problem can be fixed 100%, but we can make a lot of them better. And those two specific topics, sexual health and mental health, I think are, in the United States in general, topics we don't feel comfortable talking about, but they're extremely important to your overall quality of life. So I want to make sure you feel comfortable talking about it with your provider. If you are not, you have the right to seek out another opinion, to ask to talk to another provider who you may be more comfortable talking about these things with. Just make sure you do it. Ask.
Is there any advice you would give someone that's seeking out that type of information? Maybe they're not comfortable asking and talking about their provider. Are there any resources on websites or anything like that that would be helpful?
Absolutely. Both the National Cancer Institute and the American Cancer Society have websites out there that have a lot of great resources about the majority of cancer side effects. But specifically talking about those two topics, they have, and some of their information is actually what I use with my patients, they have a ton of information out there about sexual health resources and what to do if you have these specific conditions. Additionally, they have not only websites, but telephone numbers where you can call, especially in the setting of some mental health crises. And so those two are great resources. Your clinics in general will also have some sort of handout typically with those resources listed. So you could even ask one of your nurses.
Since sexual health is not something that is commonly talked about, can we just dive into that a little further? What are some of the side effects that patients undergo?
Oh, this is a great question. So it's different whether you're male or female, and whatever parts you have genetically. Some of our treatments for those born with female genitalia can cause lack of libido, which means not interested in sex. It can cause decreased sensation to that area. Anywhere from a surgical intervention that can cut some of the, or injure some of the nerves in that region versus some of our drugs can cause nerve damage. Lack of estrogen, that is something that is a big problem with our breast cancer patients because we give them medicines to shut down estrogen production. That can dry out the tissues in the vaginal area and can cause things such as vaginal odor, pain with intercourse, increased urinary frequency or incontinence. And all of this is our stuff we can talk about, and we have a lot of ways to manage this that do not necessarily include medications, but could also include those things. For men, a lot of what will happen is decreased libido and the inability to get an erection. So we deal with some erectile dysfunction. We have a lot of different ways we can manage that, anything from medications to penis pumps to even implantables. And then men with prostate cancer, a lot of times testosterone feeds their prostate cancer, so we'll give them medicines that block testosterone. So we can see their libido dip with that, and then we can talk about ways to manage that or help with the libido that do not involve testosterone replacement because we can't safely give that to them.
I really appreciate you diving into this a little further, because I know that there's a lot of us out there that wouldn't be comfortable talking about it.
Right.
And just the helpful information, the websites you gave us, I really appreciate it. The other thing I wanted to ask, since it's also something that's not talked about a lot, is mental health. What kind of mental health issues do you see with cancer patients?
Gosh, I think the most common things we see are depression and anxiety. That typically is at its highest point or its most intense point right after diagnosis and immediately during treatment. And then once patients are settled into treatment, it often can calm down a bit. And then I tend to see a kind of a second phase of it, especially if we are treating for curative intent. Even if we're not treating for curative intent, anytime someone comes to getting a scan, their anxiety and peaks. And again, very, very expectedly, you're getting a scan that is potentially telling you your cancer's grown or spread. Who wouldn't be anxious about that? And so those are probably the most common things I see. But the other thing I want to touch base on that I think is really important is post-traumatic stress disorder. I think a lot of people hear that term and think, oh my gosh, you have to be in a bad car accident or you have to be in the military and serve and see war to have post-traumatic stress disorder. That is completely untrue. PTSD can occur from any type of trauma. That could be a physical trauma or an emotional trauma. And let's face it, cancer is both. People often have physical problems, have surgeries, so they have that physical change in their body, and that's a huge trauma. But this diagnosis puts your mortality right in front of your face, and emotionally that is really challenging. I have had many patients over the years who feel like they're doing great, and then something years down the road may trigger flashbacks and recurrent anxiety, depression related to their cancer diagnosis. Sometimes it's a diagnosis of a family or family friend or loved one with cancer. Sometimes it has nothing to do with another cancer diagnosis at all, but it comes back. And so I think it's really important to make sure we're addressing that, because a lot of people feel that mental health diagnoses are very stigmatic in that it makes you weak or makes you, makes you, you know, unacceptable to others or weird or something. And that is not the case.
Thanks for going over all of that. I know we're coming to a close and we have covered a lot of ground on survivorship, and I've learned so much. I personally did not know that survivorship did include the family members.
Yes.
So I, as a daughter of a breast cancer and colon cancer survivor, and a survivor too.
Yeah.
Yep. That's incredible.
Yep. So again, in a situation like yours, you know, if you ever have questions, you may not be a patient of your local cancer center, but they probably have resources for you if you had questions or concerns.
That's great.
You can always ask.
Before we wrap up, I want to thank you again for sharing your perspective and your expertise with our listeners today.
You're welcome. I'm so glad to be here, and thank you for asking.
Thanks, Stephanie.
As a reminder, the information shared in this episode is meant to support and guide you. It is not a substitute for your own medical care. If questions come up or something resonates with you today, we encourage you to talk with your oncology care team or primary care provider. They know your history best and can help you decide what next steps are right for you. You do not have to navigate survivorship alone. Thanks for joining us today. Wherever you are in your survivorship journey, we are glad you are here.